Okay, let's unpack this. Imagine a career that kicked off on like the wild stages of MTV, then blossomed into this sprawling digital media empire, lent a distinctive voice to some of our most cherished animated characters, and ultimately saw its owner hosting some of primetime television's most talked about after shows.
It's quite a range.
That's an incredible journey to trace, isn't it?
Cool.
We're diving deep into the multifaceted life and career of Chris Hardwick, an individual who has truly been a constant, evolving, and often surprising presence in pop culture for decades.
What's truly fascinating here, and what our deep dive will hopefully illuminate, is how Christopher Ryan Hardwick has so expertly navigated such diverse and often rapidly changing mediums, from stand-up comedy stages to podcasting, from network television to film, and as a prolific writer and producer too, since his career first began back in 91.
Wow, 91.
Yeah. Our sources paint a rich picture of a truly prolific individual. And our mission today is really to extract the most important nuggets of knowledge and insight.
Give you that shortcut.
Exactly. Offering you a shortcut to understanding how he built that expansive career, the unique influences that shaped him, and, well, the significant challenges he encountered along the way.
So what does this all mean for you, our listener, as you join us on this deep dive?
Well,
we're going to meticulously trace his path, starting from his roots as a kid in Kentucky, who became a junior high chess champion.
Yeah, the chess champion thing.
All the way to becoming the host of iconic shows like Talking Dead and The Wall, the visionary creator of Nerdist Industries, and an instantly recognizable voice actor.
Absolutely.
You'll get to explore how a passionate engagement with pop culture, combined with a sharp intellect and remarkable adaptability, can truly forge an expansive and incredibly durable career.
And lead to some pretty unexpected turns and surprising longevity, especially in the fast-paced entertainment industry.
Okay, let's start right at the very beginning then. Let's set the stage for this truly remarkable journey.
Sounds good.
Christopher Ryan Hardwick was born in Louisville, Kentucky, November 23, 1971. And his family roots offer some intriguing insights into his formative years, maybe even hinting at his future trajectory.
How so?
Well, his father, Billy Hardwick, born in 41, passed away in 2013. He wasn't just any father. He was a highly respected professional 10-pin bowler.
Wow, a pro bowler. That's cool. Think about the dedication, the precision needed for that.
Exactly. And the competitive spirit. Then his mother, Sharon Hills, maiden name Vicente, she was a real estate agent based in Pasadena, California.
Pasadena, okay. So, close to the industry.
Right. And here's a truly charming, almost serendipitous connection. His maternal grandfather, who was Italian-American, actually owned and operated a bowling alley.
No way.
Yeah. And it was there, at that very bowling alley, that his parents first met.
That's amazing. It's like destiny, kind of.
It really feels like it. Like his path was subtly linked to places of public gathering and competition right from the start.
York.
He was also raised in his mother's Roman Catholic faith.
Right, so that provided a sort of cultural and moral framework during his upbringing. It's those kinds of foundational details, you know, that become so much more significant when you connect them to the broader picture of his life.
Totally.
These early experiences, particularly that competitive drive, maybe from his father's profession, and that almost storybook family history tied to a bowling alley, they really hint at a foundation for someone who would later sort of effortlessly blend wit, strategic thinking, and a knack for communication.
Definitely.
But here's something even more extraordinary from his childhood, a detail that feels almost premonitory. Our sources reveal that at the incredibly young age of 4, Chris Hardwick met the legendary comedian Joan Rivers.
At 4?
Yeah. And apparently they maintained a lifelong friendship.
That's incredible. Imagine the early exposure to comedy, to that sharp wit.
Exactly. From a legend like Rivers, that's an unexpected and frankly profoundly significant connection. It undoubtedly shaped his comedic sensibilities and maybe his comfort with celebrity long before his own career took off.
Wow.
And adding to this early intellectual curiosity, he grew up in Memphis, Tennessee, where he wasn't just a regular kid. He became the 1983 Memphis City Junior High Chess Champion.
The Chess Champion. I love that detail.
It's not just a fun fact, though. It showcases an early strategic mind, right? An ability to think several moves ahead, a disciplined approach. Traits we definitely see later in his professional life.
Absolutely. Those early details really do set an intriguing stage for the diverse path he'd eventually forge. Okay, moving on to his education and those critical formative years.
Right.
Chris's schooling spanned across different states, which maybe contributed to his adaptable nature.
Could be.
Attended St. Benedict at Auburndale in Tennessee, then Regis Jesuit High School in Aurora, Colorado.
Okay.
Before completing his senior year at Loyola High School right here in Los Angeles.
Back to California.
Yep. His academic journey culminated at UCLA. He pursued and graduated with a degree in philosophy in 1993.
Philosophy, that actually makes a lot of sense.
Doesn't it? With its emphasis on critical thinking, logic, rhetoric, understanding different perspectives, it feels incredibly pertinent to someone who'd later excel in analytical discussions, debate, nuanced humor.
Yeah, you can totally see the through line there. He was also in a fraternity, Chi Phi, during his freshman year.
Right. And for those of you who enjoy those, like, fun celebrity connections, it's worth noting he had a rather well-known roommate during his college days, Will Wheaton.
No kidding, Will Wheaton.
Yeah. They met, apparently, at a screening of the movie Arachnophobia in Burbank.
Arachnophobia. Okay. That meeting place feels like a perfectly nerdy genesis for that friendship, doesn't it?
Totally. Between two guys who'd both become pretty prominent figures in what we now call nerd culture.
That's wild.
And then the exciting transition into the vibrant world of entertainment truly began for Chris.
Okay, let's get into it.
He kicked off his professional career in the mid-1990s as a DJ on the hugely popular Los Angeles radio station KROQ-FM.
KROQ, classic LA, a great place to hone that on-air presence.
Definitely. And from there, his early television hosting roles were, well, they were quite distinct and quickly put him in front of a national audience.
MTV days.
Exactly. In 1993, he hosted the MTV game show Trashed.
Oh, I remember Trashed. That show was insane.
Wasn't it? Contestants risked having their cherished belongings destroyed based on trivia answers.
It was pure 90s MTV chaos. But his ability to navigate that, you know, that unpredictable environment, it showcased his quick wit.
Totally. Then, from 95 to 98, he really became a household name for a whole generation of MTV viewers, co-hosting the wildly popular dating game show Singled Out.
With Jenny McCarthy, right.
With Jenny McCarthy, yeah. For an impressive 130 episodes, he guided contestants through that hilarious, often awkward world of dating, showed a real knack for charming audiences, keeping the energy high.
He was good at that. He also ventured into acting around then.
He did. Starred in the UPN comedy Guys Like Us from 98 to 99. Didn't last long, though, only 12 episodes.
Great.
But despite that, he made numerous guest appearances on various well-known shows of the era, like CSI, Married,
yes.
With Children, Boy Meets World.
Popping up everywhere.
Yeah. And showcasing an early and rather eclectic mix of projects, he even appeared in some films.
Like the Rob Zombie ones?
Exactly. Rob Zombie's House of 1,000 Corpses in 2003 and Halloween the Second in 2009, plus a smaller role in the blockbuster Terminator 3, also in 2003.
Wow. Horror, sci-fi, comedy, hosting. It really was a whirlwind of diverse experiences early on, laying that groundwork.
Yeah. And here's where it gets really interesting, as we transition to what many might consider his most impactful and defining era. The genesis and rapid expansion of his self-proclaimed nerd media empire.
Right. The Nerdist era.
His contributions to Wired magazine starting in 2007 were a clear precursor to this, right? He was already identifying and articulating the passions of a particular audience.
Mm-hmm. Setting the stage.
But the true game changer, the moment that effectively launched this empire, was the debut of the Nerdist podcast in February 2010, hosted with Jonah Ray and Matt Mira.
Yeah, that podcast was huge. It wasn't just another show in what was still a pretty new medium then.
Not at all. It quickly got significant critical recognition. The AV Club called it one of 2010's best. Rolling Stone put it in their top 10 comedy podcasts.
That's major validation early on.
Totally. And what was so innovative about it, he essentially took his own deeply personal interests, his passion for what he defined as nerd culture, you know, comics, video games, sci-fi, tech, all of it.
And built an entire brand around them.
Exactly. It became this vibrant, welcoming space where like-minded people could just revel in their shared passions. Long before nerd became truly mainstream and marketable.
He really tapped into something there. It wasn't just a podcast. It was, like you said, the foundational blueprint for a new kind of digital content creation. Really redefined fan engagement.
Yeah.
Which really prompts an important question for us to consider, doesn't it? How did someone with a background mostly in general entertainment, like MTV game shows,
right.
How did he manage to so astutely identify and successfully capitalize on this burgeoning nerd culture back when it was still pretty niche, before it exploded?
It speaks to remarkable foresight.
Totally. a keen understanding of audience, and that innate ability to build genuine community. And Chris Hardwick himself, he wasn't shy about his vision, right? He called it a nerd media empire.
He did. Very forward-thinking. Ambitious.
Definitely. He understood that passion, when properly channeled, could be a powerful engine for growth. And it wasn't just audio. He created tangible in-person spaces.
The Nerdist Theater.
Exactly. At Meltdown Comics in LA, that became this vital hub for stand-up, live podcasts, fan gatherings, really solidifying that community aspect.
Yeah, that was smart. And he extended the brand into publishing, too.
Right, the book. The Nerdist Way, How to Reach the Next Level in Real Life, came out late 2011.
Which wasn't just a vanity project, right?
Yeah.
It offered actual advice, a framework for embracing your inner nerd for personal growth, translating the brand's ethos into a new medium.
Yeah. And then came the big strategic move, June 2011, the equity partnership with Geek Chick Daily to officially form Nerdist Industries.
Formalizing it. Accelerating the expansion.
Exactly. It was becoming a real business.
That's right. And the corporate evolution, the growth, it didn't stop there. It only sped up. February 2012, that partnership solidified further. Geek Chick Daily fully merged with Nerdist Industries.
And rebranded as Nerdist News.
Yep. Which significantly expanded the brand's editorial and content reach. And Hardwick took on the crucial role of Chief Creative Officer.
CCO. So he's shaping the creative direction, the identity of this whole thing.
Exactly. Not just a figurehead. Then came a truly massive milestone, July 10th, 2012. Legendary Entertainment.
The movie studio, Dark Knight, Godzilla.
That Legendary Entertainment, they acquired Nerdist Industries.
Wow, that's huge validation.
Totally. A massive validation of Hardwick's vision and the power of nerd culture. And it elevated his personal standing, too. Gave him the notable title of co-president of Legendary's digital business.
Co-president. So he's now a key figure in digital media strategy at a major studio level.
Right. Cemented his position, high-level institutional.
Well, things evolve.
Oh. Always. And in February 2018, Hardwick announced a new chapter for his flagship audio project, the rebranding of the Nerdist podcast to ID10T with Chris Hardwick.
ID10T, why the change?
Well, his contract with Legendary Entertainment had ended in 2017. So this was him taking back creative control, essentially.
And the name ID10T, that's like tech slang, right? User error.
Exactly. It's that playful nod to tech, the idiot error code. Perfectly encapsulates his self-deprecating humor and his continued connection to that world, even post-Legendary.
So it marked a significant pivot, and the podcast kept going strong.
Amazingly strong. By December 2019, it had broadcast an astonishing 1,000 episodes under both names.
1,000 episodes. That's incredible longevity.
Isn't it? A testament to its connection with its audience. The appeal endured way beyond the corporate ownership.
So while he was meticulously building this whole digital empire, his presence on traditional TV was also just exploding. He was doing both simultaneously. It's pretty remarkable.
Multitasking master.
Totally. During that initial MTV era, besides Trash and Singled Out, he also hosted the syndicated dating show Shipmates.
Right. More hosting. Cementing that charming, witty guide persona.
But his interests weren't just dating and games. Remember Wired Science?
Oh, yeah. On PBS, October to December 2007. That aligned perfectly with his writing for Wired magazine.
Exactly. It showcased a more serious educational side. Delving into science with that approachable yet intelligent style. You can see the philosophy degree peeking through.
Totally.
Then, June 2009, he stepped into the satirical spotlight as the host of G4's Web Soup.
A spinoff of The Soup. That felt like a natural fit. He'd guest hosted Talk Soup before.
Right. He had that knack for sharp comedic commentary on pop culture absurdity, online videos. He was perfect for it.
And then came the after shows, a format that truly became like a defining and hugely successful part of his TV career. Arguably made him a pioneer in that space.
Talking Dead.
Exactly. Started in 2011. Live after show for AMC's The Walking Dead. Later expanded to Fear the Walking Dead. And crucially, he wasn't just the host.
He produced it too.
Yep. Deeply involved in shaping its content, its tone. And the show was this unique, really engaging blend, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Celebrity, fans, cast, crew.
Audience interaction, games, polls, exclusive clips.
What made it work so well under him? I think it was his ability to bridge that gap between casual viewers and hardcore fans.
Yeah, he created this communal space for genuine discussion, affectionate dissection of the show. His interviewing style was empathetic but insightful.
Got great behind-the-scenes stuff, invited critical analysis. He was so good at it, so skilled at fostering that shared fandom.
That he extended it, right? Talking Bad for Breaking Bad in 2013.
And Talking Saul for Better Call Saul in 2016.
He became the absolute go-to guy for those insightful, fan-centric, often deeply analytical discussions about beloved TV shows.
He really did.
And his hosting prowess clearly went beyond just fan discussions. It crossed impressively into comedy game shows, too.
Right. In 2011, he hosted BBC America's Ministry of Laughs, that block of British comedy.
But it was from 2013 to 2017 that he really cemented his comedy hosting credentials with At Midnight on Comedy Central.
Oh, At Midnight was brilliant.
Wasn't it? Half-hour comedic panel show. He didn't just host it with his signature wit. He created it, wrote it, executive produced it for 600 episodes.
600. And it was a critical and popular hit. Innovative format comedians competing on internet trends.
Fast-paced, improvisational, super smart. And it won Emmys, 2 primetime Emmys for outstanding creative achievement in interactive media social TV experience, 2015 and 2016.
That's huge for its blend of comedy and social media interaction.
Yeah, and if that wasn't enough, since 2016, he's also hosted The Wall.
The Plinko-inspired game show on NBC, High Stakes. He's an EP on that too.
This whole segment of his career just underscores that incredible ability to connect with audiences. Conversational, engaging, funny. Whether he's talking zombies, moderating fast-paced comedy, or building tension on a game show.
He truly became the host for shows that blend fandom and entertainment, navigating live TV, interactive media, all of it.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. What's truly remarkable about Chris Hardwick, and what we really want to unpack, is his incredible versatility across so many different mediums.
Right, he's not just a host or a digital pioneer.
Yeah, he's also an accomplished actor, a prolific voice artist, and a seasoned stand-up comedian.
Let's get into the acting first. Beyond those Rob Zombie films and Terminator 3?
Yeah, his live-action filmography includes diverse appearances, like The Mother of Invention in 2009, and an interesting role as an estate sale organizer in Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close in 2011.
Oh, okay, a serious drama.
Right. A small role, but it showcased a different, more subdued side. Showed his range beyond comedy or genre stuff.
And later he lent his voice to animated films too.
Yep. Lego, The Adventures of Clutch Powers back in 2010. And notably prominent voice roles in the Lego Batman movie and the Lego Ninjago movie, both in 2017.
So live action voice roles highlights his willingness to explore different projects, adapt his style.
Definitely.
But what's truly fascinating here and maybe underappreciated by the casual listener is the sheer breadth and impact of his voice work.
It's huge.
It really is. It speaks to this chameleon-like ability to inhabit vastly different roles just using his voice. And for you, the listener, it reveals how someone can build this incredibly impressive career behind the scenes, becoming a familiar, if sometimes unrecognized, voice across so many platforms.
Give us some examples.
Okay, consider this. He voiced Otis the Cow in the Barnyard series.
Right, taking over from Kevin James in the movie.
Which is significant. He had to maintain continuity but bring his own comedic timing to an established character. He also voiced Glowface in The X's for 20 episodes, 2005-2007.
Okay.
And maybe more strikingly, he voiced Green Arrow, Oliver Queen, in the Batman animated series, 2007-2008, and later in Lego Dimensions in 2016.
Voicing an iconic superhero requires a certain gravitas.
Totally. Which he delivered. He also portrayed Sokka in The Legend of Korra in 2012, and the wonderfully eccentric Craig the Snake on Sanjay and Craig from 2013 to 2016 for 60 episodes.
Craig the Snake. That shows his comedic versatility for sure.
Absolutely. And his voice work extends deep into video games too. Testament to his nerd culture roots.
Like Vaughn in Tales from the Borderlands.
Exactly. Telltale Games 2014. And he reprised the role enthusiastically in the Borderlands 2 DLC in 2019 and Borderlands 3 also in 2019. Shows his commitment to those franchises, contributing to interactive storytelling.
He even did a Futurama voice.
Yeah. Guest voiced the villain Klaxon for a special episode released uniquely on the Nerdist podcast in 2017, blurring the lines between his voice acting and podcasting.
Wow.
This deep dive into his voice work really emphasizes how talent and adaptability can lead to this expansive, varied career, often where his face isn't seen, but his voice is just integral.
It's absolutely incredible how many different characters and worlds he's brought to life just with his voice. Okay, let's pivot now to his stand-up comedy and musical roots, which are really fundamental to understanding his comedic persona.
Hard and firm.
Exactly. performed extensively with Mike Ferman in that musical comedy duo. Their unique blend of clever lyrics, musical skill, absurd humor. It got enough attention for their own half-hour special Comedy Central Presents, Hard and Firm, premiered January 2008.
I remember that. They were really funny. And they did songs for Rob Zombie's animated movie, too.
They did. The Haunted World of El Super Bisto.
Ah.
Showcasing their versatile comedic and musical chops again.
And his solo stand-up.
Well, his material got early recognition when Comedy Central used some of it for that animated series Shorties Watchin' Shorties back in 2004, a glimpse of his early comedic voice.
Okay.
And both his solo stuff and the duo act were featured on the Comedy Death Ray compilation CD in 2007, showed his presence in the alt comedy scene.
Right, he toured too.
Yeah, gained valuable stage experience touring as a featured comedian for Joel McHale, made multiple appearances on John Oliver's New York stand-up show in 2010, and the Benson Interruption same year, solidifying his standing.
So he was really putting in the work.
Definitely. Then came the specials. Filmed his first full one-hour stand-up special for Comedy Central, Mandroid. In New York, February 2012.
Mandroid, how is it received?
Aired November 2012 and was, by all accounts, well-received. Marked a big milestone in his solo career. Followed by another successful special, Funk Comfortable, in 2016, showcasing his continued growth as a comic.
So when you look at the evolution of his comedic voice,
yeah,
from that improvisational musical stuff on Hard and Firm to these deeply personal full-length specials, his style is incredibly versatile, isn't it? And personal.
Totally. He masterfully blends observational humor with moments of blue comedy, sharp sarcasm, self-deprecation, incisive satire, using these tools to tackle a whole range of subjects.
Like what?
American culture, political absurdities, human behavior.
Yeah.
And, of course, lovingly dissecting pop culture.
And his influences really tell a story, too.
They do. Hardwick himself cited this incredible range of icons. Seeing the list gives you a real sense of the comedic traditions that shaped his own unique voice.
Who did he mention?
Legends. Like Steve Martin, you can see his absurdist humor. Theatricality, maybe. George Carlin, that sharp social commentary, linguistic precision.
Okay, I see that.
Richard Pryor and Sam Kinison, maybe their raw energy. Fearlessness inspires his occasional blue comedy. Rodney Dangerfield, master of self-deprecation. Bill Hicks' edgy intellectual critiques. Emo Phillips' unique delivery. Even Bill Cosby for storytelling and relatable observations.
Wow, that's a real murderer's row of comedy.
Isn't it? This rich tapestry of influences helps us understand how Hardwick crafted a comedic voice that's intelligent, relatable, entertaining, capable of subtle wit and broad humor.
Makes sense.
Okay, now we shift gears a bit to discuss Chris Hardwick's personal journey, which includes significant milestones and at one point faced intense public scrutiny.
Right.
On the personal side, like many public figures, he's navigated various relationships over the years. Was previously engaged to model actress Jacinda Barrett. Had a relationship with actress Andrea Savage, fellow comedian. In 2004, began a relationship with actor-comedian Janet Varney, well-known voice actress herself. That lasted 7 years, till their separation in 2011.
Right.
Following that, he dated Chloe Dykstra from late 2011 to July 2014.
Mm-hmm.
Then, a new chapter, September 2015, he got engaged to model and actress Lydia Hearst.
From the Hearst family.
Yeah. Prominent family, publishing ties, high society. They married August 20, 2016 in Pasadena, blending their different worlds.
And they have a child now.
They do. August 2021 announced they were expecting their first child. And January 29, 2022 announced the arrival of their daughter, Dimity Facente Hearst Hardwick.
So personal milestones, building a family life amidst that demanding career.
Exactly. And a deeply personal, profoundly important part of his journey when he's openly discussed is his sobriety.
Right. He's been very open about that.
Chris Hardwick is a recovering alcoholic, been steadfastly sober since October 2003.
That's a long time, a significant commitment.
It really is.
Yeah.
A defining aspect of his personal life, a turning point, testament to his resilience, determination. Interestingly, a former coworker, reflecting on this transformation,
yeah,
noted that he replaced his alcoholism with workaholism. Insightful. Suggested immense drive, that energy previously channeled unhealthily, found this new, incredibly productive outlet in his career.
Yeah, highlights a complex aspect of his personality, that relentless dedication, intensity. Once redirected, it really fueled his ascent, made him the prolific person we've been discussing.
Which brings us to a challenging, complex segment of his public life.
Yeah.
The abuse allegation and its immediate, far-reaching aftermath.
Right.
And this particular event, it really raises important questions. about the complexities of public allegations in the digital age, the rigorous processes organizations use to evaluate them.
It highlights the challenges of navigating deeply personal narratives in the public glare and the impact on individuals' careers. Exactly. And it's important we reiterate here, as our mission states, we're simply conveying the ideas, events, public responses contained in the source material.
No taking sides, no endorsing viewpoints.
Precisely. Our aim is just to provide you, the listener, with a clear, impartial, thorough understanding of the reported facts as presented in our sources.
Okay, so the sequence of events began June 14th, 2018. Chris Hardwick's ex-girlfriend, Chloe Dykstra, published an essay on Medium.
Right, and in this widely read essay, she made serious allegations, claimed emotional and sexual abuse by an unnamed ex-boyfriend.
And also alleged career blacklisting, she said, in retaliation for ending the relationship.
Now, while the essay didn't explicitly name Chris Hardwick, the timing, plus several specific identifiable details in the narrative,
led many readers and media outlets to conclude it was him she was referring to.
Exactly. The essay quickly got widespread attention, sparked considerable public discussion.
And the initial industry response to these serious allegations was swift.
Yeah.
And significant for Hardwick.
Very swift. Nerdist, the company he founded, the brand he was synonymous with, reacted quickly by removing all mentions of him from its website.
Wow. Scrubbing his name from his own creation.
Yeah. Concurrently, AMC, the network behind Talking Dead and his other shows, announced further episodes of Talking with Chris Hardwick would be pulled from the schedule indefinitely.
Right.
And adding to that immediate fallout, Hardwick himself chose to step away from moderating all the AMC and BBC America panels scheduled for San Diego Comic-Con that year.
So a collective response from multiple major entities showed the immediate gravity, the intense pressure and scrutiny.
Absolutely. Highlighted the immediate impact across his professional commitments.
However, the situation then evolved significantly following a series of internal investigations.
Right. On July 25, 2018, just over a month after the initial allegations, AMC issued a public statement, announced they'd conducted a comprehensive investigation alongside law firm Loeb & Loeb.
And their conclusion.
As stated by AMC, their investigation had failed to confirm Dykstra's allegations. Their statement clarified further, saying, "We take these matters very seriously, and given the information available to us after a very careful review, including interviews with numerous individuals, we believe returning Chris to work is the appropriate step."
And Dykstra responded.
2 days later, Chloe Dykstra responded publicly on Twitter. She stated, "I chose not to participate in the investigation of the person I spoke of. I do not believe in an eye for an eye."
And she added.
She added that she originally wrote her essay so she could move on with her life, and now she intends to do so.
Okay. And what about his other work, NBC Nerdist?
Well, following its own separate review process, NBC announced on July 31st, 2018, that Hardwick would return as host of The Wall.
Right.
And finally, August 10th, 2018, after their own internal investigation, Hardwick's name and association were fully reinstated on Nerdist's website.
So these events really underscore the complex, multi-layered nature of public allegations, the rigorous reviews companies undertake, and the very personal public responses from everyone involved. Illustrates the immense challenges of navigating this stuff in the public eye.
It really does.
So as we bring our deep dive into Chris Hardwick's remarkable career to a close, it's abundantly clear his journey is a powerful testament to adaptability, relentless passion, sheer professional drive.
Absolutely.
We've traced his path from those surprising roots, child chess champion, lifelong friend of Joan Rivers, through his insightful philosophy studies, his early energetic MTV days, and that extensive chameleon-like career as a voice actor.
It's been one of continuous evolution.
Totally. Seamlessly spanning traditional media like TV and film, while simultaneously pioneering and dominating that digital content landscape with Nerdist.
His unique ability to genuinely connect with audiences, whether through shared pop culture obsessions, sharp comedy, or those in-depth analytical discussions, it's made him a singular, enduring figure.
Yeah. We've seen how he built that sprawling nerd media empire from just a podcast, how he navigated the intense, complex waters of significant public scrutiny, and how he found personal stability and growth through sustained sobriety and family life.
And if we connect this truly multifaceted career to the bigger picture, Chris Hardwick's professional trajectory, especially that incredibly prescient pivot into digital media with Nerdist and his extensive, varied voice work, It provides a fascinating, incredibly rich case study.
To go what way?
In building, sustaining, and evolving a personal brand in the modern entertainment industry. His story powerfully illustrates how a deeply personal passion can indeed be cultivated, scaled into a professional empire.
And how someone can adapt and thrive in the media landscape just rapidly shifts and redefines itself.
Exactly. And for you, our listener, understanding such a diversified, resilient career, it can offer invaluable insights into the enduring value of pursuing multiple passions, the strategic wisdom of cultivating niche interests into mainstream success, and the profound importance of resilience when facing both unprecedented opportunities and significant personal challenges.
It really offers a kind of blueprint for navigating a career where traditional roles are constantly merging, evolving, demanding new skills.
Well said.
So what does this extraordinary deep dive into Chris Hardwick's life and career mean for you to ponder and reflect upon? Given the incredible, often wildly divergent range of his work. I mean, interviewing celebrities about zombie apocalypses, voicing animated cows, building an entire digital culture around nerd interests, standing strong amidst intense personal scrutiny. What does his journey ultimately tell us about the future of media personalities and how personal brands are not just built, but also fiercely challenged, adapted, and sustained in our increasingly interconnected and scrutinizing modern world?